Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, Prahlad pacifies the Lord with his prayers, and we have completed up to text number 35. And today we have Sri Krishna Shalagram Srila. He has underneath, he has the little impression of a calf's hoof print. And Krishna Shila, the Shalagram Shila is very rare in Kali Yuga. They say Krishna Shila is particularly rare. So I don't know how I got one. But I have three. And but it says if you worship a Krishna Shalagram Shila, it's your last birth in this world. We are today. We're going to glorify the Lord through the Srimad Bhagavatam, through Prahlad Maharaj. He's going to accept our prayers, which are non-different from the prayers of Prahlad Maharaj. So, for all of us, it's our last birth. It's that easy. The calf's hoof print indicates that he allows you to step over the whole material energy, just like the stepping over the water in the calf's hoof print. Very merciful. So text number 36. Lord Brahma could then see you possessing thousands and thousands of faces, feet, heads, hands, thighs, noses, ears and eyes. You were very nicely dressed, being decorated and bedecked with varieties of ornaments and weapons. Seeing you in the form of Lord Vishnu, your symptoms and form being transcendental, your legs extending from the lower planets, Lord Brahma achieved transcendental bliss. Purport, Lord Brahma, being completely pure, could see the original form of the Lord as Vishnu, having many thousands of faces and forms. This process is called self-realization. Genuine self-realization consists not of perceiving the impersonal effulgence of the Lord, but seeing face-to-face the transcendental form of the Lord. As distinctly mentioned here, Lord Brahma saw the Supreme Lord as Mahapurush, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Arjuna also saw Krishna in the same way, therefore he told the Lord, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Paramam Bhavam Purusham Sasvatam Divyam. You are the Supreme Brahman, the ultimate, the supreme abode and purifier, the absolute truth, and the eternal divine person. The Lord is Padma Purush, the supreme form. Purusham Sasvatam. He is everlastingly the supreme enjoyer. It is not that the impersonal Brahman assumes a form, on the contrary, the impersonal Brahman effulgence is an emanation from the supreme form of the Lord. Upon being purified, Brahma could see the supreme form of the Lord. The impersonal Brahman cannot have heads, noses, ears, hands and legs. This is not possible, for these are attributes of the Lord's form. The word mayamayam means spiritual knowledge. This is explained by Madhvacharya. Mayamayam gyanaswarupam. The word mayamayam describing the Lord's form should not be taken to mean illusion. Rather, the Lord's form is factual, and seeing this form is a result of perfect knowledge. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Bahunam Janmanamante Gyanavan Mamprabhajate. The word Gyanavan refers to one who is perfectly in knowledge. Such a person can see the personality of Godhead, and therefore he surrenders unto the eternal, unto the Lord. The Lord's being symptomized by a face, nose, ears, and so on is eternal. Without such a form, no one can be blissful. The Lord, however, is Satchidananda Vigraha, as stated in the Shastra, Ishvara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha. When one is in perfect transcendental bliss, he can see the Lord's supreme form, Vigraha. In this regard, Srila Madhvacharya says, quoting some Sanskrit, Lord Brahma saw that as aromas and colours spread throughout the earth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead pervades the cosmic manifestation in a subtle form. So we left off on this example of the how Lord Brahma, after undergoing severe austerities for many hundreds of years, could see that the Lord, the supreme cause of all causes, the personality of Godhead, was spread throughout everything, even his own body and senses, although very subtle. And just as aroma is perceived in aroma and different colours are perceived in earth. So, so we discussed that example that within earth, we can look at across a plane of dirt, and we may not, at certain times of the year, we may not see that there are any flowers, and it just all looks just the one sort of grey-brown colour. And then under the right condition, flowers appear, and all sorts of beautiful colours of many varieties, very bright and bold, appear. Those colours are always there, but by certain circumstances they become perceived. So something can exist somewhere, and the example of the aromas and colours is that they are something quite strong and powerful. Like you see there. The colours, bright reds and lavenders and yellows, they're quite astoundingly bright, and they really capture your senses. And strong flowers like these flowers here, they're from my home. They've actually got a fragrance. And that's they were picked this morning, and I've kept them and just put them on there. But it's something quite powerful, quite distinct. And of course, if you have a whole field of different flowers and colours, it just makes quite an impression. So there's something very wonderful. The other thing about the flowers and the aromas and colours is something very wonderful, isn't it? Something very pleasant. So also, Brahma is saying that there's something very wonderful and pleasing that pervades throughout the material energy in a very subtle form that may not always be seen. But in the right conditions, it can be seen. It's always there, but in the right conditions, it can be seen. And he's saying, what is that beautiful, wondrous, subtle presence? It is the form of the Lord. That's what it is. And now, then he describes that form. That there are thousands and thousands of faces, feet, hands, thighs. So, you know, quite unlimited. And very nicely, you know, that form is very nicely dressed and decorated. All sorts of ornaments and weapons. So, you know, he's looking at that form of Vishnu. And it's not that he's just, you know, although there's many thousands of arms and heads and eyes, still, it's a form, a unified form that's still beautifully dressed and decorated with different weapons and what have you. Vision. You know, going from the lower planetary system all the way up to the higher, so extending throughout the whole universe. And of course, you know, when you get that understanding, here is a form which is literally covering practically the entire universe. You know, which gives the impression that it's there, but it's not dependent upon the universe. You know, so you know, sometimes they do a light show, and they put it over the top of an existing building, and you understand that light show, which is not dependent on that building being there, sort of thing. It's separate from it, and yet there it is, you know, transposed upon something, a sort of it's like in one sense, you know, you have holograms, and they sort of appear, but they're not really attached to the room in which they appear, like that. So this form is like that. It's not as if he's appeared from a particular part of the universe, and you know, but literally takes up the whole universe. And, so you know, it's quite a significant form that he's seeing, the form of Vishnu, and of course, generally the understanding that what is all pervading is Brahman. Brahman is all pervading. And here, Brahma is saying, yes, Brahman is all-pervading, but that Brahman has form. So that's otherwise, you know, so the philosophers understand that. Okay, there may be some all-pervading, you know, oneness, the cause of everything. Everything is resting on that. So that is Brahman. But he's saying, no. It is Brahman, but it's not impersonal. There's actually form to it. So that's the surprising part. Because when we put, you know, the concept, as long as we have a material concept of form, the two... those two things, you know, are contradictory. You know, when we say something is all-pervading, everywhere, without limit, then it sort of excludes having a form, you know, a limited form. So, and 'cause when we say something has a form, well, then we say, okay, then... you know, within, you know, unlimited space, this form has a limited, you know, takes up a limited area of space like that. So when we take form and we say, here is form, but it's not limited by space, spaces there. And yes, this form is unlimited without any limitations created by space or time. So therefore he is describing Brahman, that yes, there is an impersonal aspect, but it also exists in a personal form, here demonstrated by Vishnu.
Is that different to the universal form?
It is the universal form. You see here the purport of Prabhupada says,
Arjuna also saw Krishna in the same way.
Yeah. See, in the purport to verse number 33, Srila Prabhupada says, the conclusion is that both the material world and the spiritual world are considered to be the body of the Supreme Lord. So we've been discussing this, that Krishna says, Aham Savasya Prabhavoma Daha Savam Prabhatate, I am the source of all material, of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. Kavadakshaya Vishnu is an expansion of Karanadakshaya Vishnu, who's an expansion of Sankarshan. In this way, Krishna is ultimately the cause of all causes, sarva-kāraṇam kāraṇam. The conclusion is that both the material world and the spiritual world are considered to be the body of the Supreme Lord. We can understand that the material body is caused by the spiritual body and is therefore an expansion of the spiritual body. Thus, when one takes up spiritual activities, one's entire material body is spiritualized. Similarly, in this material world, when the Krishna consciousness movement expands, the entire material world becomes spiritualized. So, you know, this Krishna consciousness movement is considered non-different from the Lord himself, being his, it's his lila, Sankirtan pastimes. And although it's taking place in the material world, everything becomes spiritualized, and everything in contact with the Sankirtan movement becomes spiritualized. Our body, we are a soul, and our body, expands. It's caused by the spiritual body, an expansion of the spiritual body. So, the Lord's Virata Rupa, is considered imaginary in the sense that in the spiritual world, the Lord doesn't look like that. But it's not imaginary in the sense that it's not Vishnu. And as we've seen throughout this chapter, from the Lord's perspective, there is no material. He can make his energy act in such a way that it's acting in a material way because it's hiding his all-pervasive feature as a personality of Godhead. But it is that energy is considered divine. It emanates from him. There's a verse in the. What is that? I think the 13th chapter. The Bhagavad Gita. It's no.
If you
That's also there. That's a nice verse, yeah, which corroborates this one. So that verse you're mentioning, 13, text number 14, that everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes and faces, and he hears everything. In this way, the super soul exists. Prabhupada mentions there that as the sun exists, diffusing its unlimited rays, so does the super soul or supreme personality of Godhead. He exists in his all-pervading form, and in him exist all the individual living entities. Beginning from the first great teacher Brahma, and Brahma is, you know, perceiving that in this previous verse we read how in the Bhagavatam that Brahma is perceiving how the Lord is also within him. And within all other living entities, within him exist all living entities, beginning from Brahma down to the small ants. There are unlimited heads, legs, hands and eyes, and unlimited living entities. All are existing in and on the super soul. Therefore the super soul is all pervading. The individual soul, however, cannot say that he has hands, legs and eyes everywhere. Yeah. That is not possible. If he thinks that although under ignorance he is not conscious that his hands and legs are diffused all over, but when he attains to proper knowledge he will come to that stage, his thinking is contradictory. This means that the individual soul, having become conditioned by the material nature, is not supreme. The supreme is different from the individual soul. The Supreme Lord can extend his hand without limit. The individual soul cannot. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that if anyone offers him a flower or fruit or water, he accepts. If the Lord is far distant away, how can he accept things? This is the omnipotence of the Lord. Even though he is situated in his own abode, far, far away from earth, he can extend his hand to accept whatever anyone offers. That is his potency. In the Brahma Samhita is stated, Kaloka Ivanivasat. Although he is always engaged in pastimes in his transcendental planet, he is all pervading. The individual soul cannot claim that he is all pervading. Therefore, this verse describes the supreme soul, the personality of Godhead, not the individual soul. So it's, you see here that Srila Prabhupada is equating also the super soul with Bhagavan, Narayan or Krishna, who exists in the spiritual world. That from the spiritual world, he can extend his hand into the material world and accept our offering. Because as we see in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna repeatedly says that I am that super soul. So, you know, when Krishna extends his hand into the material world to accept our offerings, or he listens to our prayers, he can do so. He's in the spiritual world, and yet he can listen to us in the material world, and he does that by expanding as a super soul who has ears everywhere, like that, listening to all the prayers, accepting all the offerings, like that. So, so here you see that whether we're talking about the in one sense, one may say, you know, are we talking about the Virata Rupa? Or are we talking about Vishnu? I'll just turn this down. Or are we talking about Bhagavan? In one sense, they're all Krishna. know, if we say, are we talking about Krishna or are we talking about the super soul? Krishna is a super soul. Are we talking about the Bharata Rupa or Krishna? Krishna is a Bharata Rupa. So, you know, Krishna's standing on the battlefield with Arjuna, talking to Arjuna, and then he expanded his Bharata Rupa form. He allowed Arjuna to see his Bharata Rupa form. And that Bharata Rupa form is able to hear everything in the universe at that time. And so many demigods were offering prayers to the Bharata Rupa and, you know, offerings and worshipping. And that means that Krishna, who is standing there with Arjuna, you know, on the chariot, is hearing everything the Bharata Rupa is hearing. It's not different. It's not as if we're saying, well, the Bharata Rupa is engaged in this way and Krishna is talking with Arjuna. Whatever the Bharata Rupa is, you know, engaging in throughout the entire universe, Krishna is aware of that, because that's him. So, you know, therefore we decide, you know, do we say that the Bharata Rupa is something material? No, because it's Krishna. You know, he is, that is his subtle form. But it's imaginary in the sense that, you know, the Lord has a form that looks something like the material universe. You know, that is for our understanding, you know, to some degree or another. So this... you see in Prabhupada's purport that he's not making a distinction between Bharata Rupa, Super Soul, Krishna. Same person is acting. He can act, you know, he can talk to Arjuna, hear the prayers in his Bharata Rupa. You know, as a Super Soul, he's directing all the atoms in the universe, you know, as Vishnu. It's the same person. And if it's the same person, it's Krishna. And if it's Krishna, he's completely spiritual. Isn't it? So, why, if it's Krishna, it's Brahman. You know, Krishna, everything about Krishna is spirit, Satchitananda Vigraha. It's not material energy. But his Brahman, his spiritual energy, he can make that transform in such a way that it acts like the material energy. But it acts upon the conditioned souls in a material way, not upon Krishna in a material way. And then, you know, so you see further on in that same chapter, text number 20, it says that material nature and the living entity should be understood to be beginningless. Their transformation in the modes of matter are products of material nature. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, in the second paragraph, he says, both material nature and the living entity are eternal. That is to say that they existed before the creation. The material manifestation is from the energy of the Supreme Lord, and so also are the living entities, but they are of superior energy. Both of them existed before this cosmos was manifested. Material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, and when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of Mahatattva. Similarly, the living entities are also in him, and because they are conditioned, they are adverse to serving the Lord. So, you know, when the material energy is not required, it's absorbed in the personality of God in Mahavishnu. It's within the form of the Lord. But it doesn't act on him in a material way. He has full control over it. Like that. So, and of course, you know, this is what Prahlad Maharaj is doing is he's offering these prayers to the Lord, and he's glorifying the Lord. That, you know, you're completely spiritual. You know, people say that you're a material manifestation, and that you really don't exist eternally. You know, you're just a temporary, powerful manifestation, but you're not an eternal spiritual form. There is no eternal spiritual form. But Prahlad's prayers, he's glorifying the Lord. Yes, you are an eternal person, and by understanding this, everything can be understood. So, you know, Srila Prabhupada's method was, say, the shortcut method. You know, one of the tricks that Krishna played is that you know, Prabhupada said that you know, many of his followers, in one sense, took birth in different parts of the world, you know, for the purposes of spreading the Sankirtan movement. But, you know, he also joked that in this way that, you know, they saved the airfares. But in doing so, you know, that it allowed devotees to take birth where they would never hear the nonsense that would make it very difficult to understand a simple thing. They would never hear the you know, a lot of the impersonal philosophies and what have you, which then, you know, have to be undone in order to, you know, get the real philosophy. So in that sense, Prabhupada could come along and just explain things properly from the very beginning, and which is the easiest way. And the easy way to understand all the philosophy of the Vedas is to say this. God exists as an eternal person who has all sorts of different spiritual energies, and he is completely spiritual, and his energies are completely spiritual, and he can also make his spiritual energies act in such a way that they can make us forget God, and then it acts in a material way. So everything, the whole philosophy, just relates back to Krishna's form. And that, you know, Krishna can, because his form is spiritual, it's unlimited, he can expand into many different forms, they're all eternal, and yet he remains the same person. In this way, when we understand the philosophy in terms of Krishna's form, it's very easy to understand. Just like the sun and the sunshine. You know, the basic concept is God is spiritual, and everything about is completely spiritual, and yet he can make his spiritual energy act in such a way that we can forget him, and then it becomes almost like it acts in a material way, making this material manifestation. But it doesn't cover him in a material way, as the, you know, the sunshine creates clouds, and that blocks the sun. You know, from our vision, but it doesn't block, it doesn't cover the sun itself. That. So Krishna's material spiritual energy, you know, it creates this shadow reality of the material world, but it doesn't cover the spiritual reality.
Is last in the last couple of verses back, Prabhupada did mention about that
was
in verse 30 or 4 last we discussed this when he mentioned that both energies belong to Supreme Lord.
Yep.
In a higher sense there is no exhibition of material energy because everything is spiritual energy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So
but we still call it as spiritual and material.
Yeah, so to maintain the proper perspective, we always, you know, start from the original, that the Supreme Lord, the absolute truth, the cause of everything, is completely spiritual. Mm-hmm. And everything exists within him. Form exists within him in a spiritual way. Consciousness in a spiritual way. Senses, happiness, bliss, everything exists within him in its unlimited and spiritual perfect form. Like that. So he is everything. All form is within the absolute truth. If you take all the form within, you know, that's possible, that is all within him. In its perfect and spiritual manifestation. So we take it from that platform, and then he has many energies. You know, his energy is spiritual. He is spiritual. His energy is spiritual. And yet he can utilize that spiritual energy in such a way as we can forget him. And when we forget him, it acts in a material way. Yeah. But, you know, so really to understand the philosophy, we've sort of got to start from Krishna as the personality of Godhead. Then it's easy. It's really easy. So we're starting from the understanding that the personality of Godhead is spiritual and his energy is spiritual. And that energy is called Brahman, but it has different varieties. We start with that. Then this philosophy is very easy. When we start from the other platform, what we're doing is we're starting from the conception that there's the material energy and, you know, the material manifestation. It can't come from God. Because it's material. And you're saying God is all spiritual, so it can't come from him. And, you know, if you look at from the material world, you can't see any person creating things, you know, supreme being. Where is this supreme being? You know, where is he? You know? So it just, in all respects, it becomes difficult because we're working from a material conception, trying to, you know, work upwards. It's very difficult that way. It can be done, but it's more difficult. But because you know, we are as Prahlad is, and we are actually trying to present Krishna consciousness to people who are perceiving everything from a material perspective, we have to accommodate their view. You know, if you can go up to someone and say, you know, there is a personality of Godhead, he's completely spiritual, he has all spiritual energies, and this material energy is actually his spiritual energy, which is acting in a material way to make you forget him. And if they say, yeah, okay then, that's, tell me more, then that's okay. But if they completely disagree with that, I can't accept that, then we have to, you know, take the other tack where, okay, now these people are, you know, therefore we have to dismantle their material conception and gradually show how, you know, bit by bit work upwards in one sense to that point. And if they have all sorts of philosophies, you know, which to them satisfy the explanation of the material world and where we come from and everything, then you've got to sort of dismantle them on the way as you go. So it's a much more arduous process. And this is, you know, if we look at Prahlad's prayers, it's coming from that perspective. You know, he has started, he's explaining about the modes of material nature and the material energy and time and in this way. Gradually showing that, you know, if we look at the material energy, there's something above the material energy itself and there's time. But then if you look at time, you know, there's a cause, you know, something existing beyond that. So he's sort of working his way up. You know, we started with verse 30. He makes a statement first that Krishna in his form of Narasimha is everything, and that in actuality whatever we see in this material world is actually the Lord's energy. Even the, and we, you know, we're saying it's all material, but he's saying that's all the Lord. So then, in order to dismantle the, you know, the conception that, okay, does that mean the Lord is material? No. So, you know, he explains the Lord is not material. He's aloof from it. Because it's caused by him. Just like, you know, he's the cause of it. Just like a seed is the cause of many, a subtle seed is the cause of many gross manifestations. So he explains. The Lord is this material manifestation. Because if we consider this material world, then we say, where is God? Oh, he is this. He is everything. Then if he's everything, then he's material. No, because he's existed before it. So he's the cause. But it's important to understand that this material world is, when we're talking about the supreme absolute truth, this material world is non-different from the person of God, the absolute truth. Because the material scientists, basically they say, and the atheists, okay, you know, we just see the material manifestation. We don't see any spiritual anything. And Prahlad's saying, you see the material manifestation, that is the spiritual personality of Godhead. Oh, so he's material? No, he's the seed of it. See, so trying, you know, don't, you know, they're saying that we can't see the Lord. You see the material manifestation? Yes, that I see. That's him. Oh, he's material? No, he's the cause of it. So, you know, so he's making them look at this world and gradually to see the Lord like that. Because they're trying to, you know, the scientist view will keep looking at this material cause because there is no concept of the personality of Godhead. That just doesn't exist. All we see is this. And it is completely different from anything spiritual. So then, you know, Prahlad moved on to say that about Karana Daksha Vishnu.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
That
sleeping.
He's sleeping. There's a form of the Lord who's sleeping. And yet, this is the form of the personality of Godhead who's sleeping before the material manifestation. Obviously, that form and those activities can't constitute something of the material manifestation if it existed before it. He explains very, very, you know, the material manifestation is the body of the Lord. It says this cosmic manifestation, the material world, is also your body. This total lump of matter is, and then, you know, it's agitated by the Lord's energy, his glance, time. And the seed of the, you know, universal manifestation is generated. That the universe expands like a lotus flower. Different planets, you know, and the lotus flower, and that universal manifestation comes. That seed manifests after the glance of the Lord. Just like a banyan tree grows from a small seed. From there we get Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma, after meditation, he perceived exactly the same thing, that the personality of Godhead exists. This cosmic manifestation is considered his body in this sense, that, you know, just like you have threads, and those threads form a cloth. So actually, the cloth really is a combination of all the different threads, which is originally coming from cotton, originally coming from the cotton plant, which is originally coming from a seed. You know, if we take a cloth, and then you take that cloth back to the threads, and you take those threads back to the plant, and you take that plant back to the seed. So really that cloth, you know, is a manifestation of the seed, and therefore the, you know, and we see that Karana Daksha Vishnu and Kavadaksha Vishnu, you know, they have generated that seed. And Brahma saw that therefore everything in this material manifestation has expanded from that seed, which is, you know, there by the energies of the Lord. So it is his body. Although the Lord can't be seen, just as seed can't be seen, still he is present within the universe. And when he is perceived by the transcendental process of tapasya, we see that here is this form of Vishnu which pervades the entire universe. This spiritual energy which is pervading the entire universe. But that that spiritual energy is a person with a form and has many different wonderful features. So in this way, he's moving from the material conception and showing that look close, more closely at this material world, and you will perceive that it is resting on a spiritual energy. And that spiritual energy actually has a form and is a person. So he's moving in this way. So in one sense, you know, if we look at the material body and we say that, here is a conscious being, and one may say, if we look at that material body, so we see all the different elements and chemicals of, the material energy, and yet there's consciousness, that element, we can't, take it and put it in our test tubes, we can't see what it is, we can't identify it is, we think it's a combination somehow of all the different chemicals and that put together, but that doesn't make sense either. Consciousness, it's, to say that you can mix a whole bunch of chemicals and get something known as consciousness, it's just very far-fetched. So, the consciousness is obviously, a different element altogether. And that consciousness exists within the body as literally the cause of the body. It pervades the whole body. So we're taking the universe and doing the same thing. And if you look at that, that conscious being, literally possesses, spiritual senses and spiritual form. And those spiritual senses and spiritual form are just simply covered by, by the subtle material senses and gross material senses like that. But they're literally covering the senses of the spirit soul. So, when you put a jumper on, it's not you say, oh, all of a sudden he's got an arm. No, it's because I've got an arm. The jumper sort of covers it, because we have a senses, therefore the body covers it. They're already there. So we're just looking at the universe in the same way. So you may think it's all material, but look, and you see there's consciousness, and that consciousness has form. Prabhupada says here, without such a form, no one can be blissful. Form, meaning that one has senses. a form indicates senses that you enjoy with and act with, a form also indicates that it is perceivable and interactive by others. So this form, when we meditate upon it, one needs a form really to be blissful. No one. So a person, how can a person be blissful without a form? You think about that. Imagine us sitting here, right? Oh, well, we couldn't sit here, could we? Mm-hmm. We don't have a form. The seat wouldn't have much value to me. So imagine if we had no form, no tongue, no eyes. How could I enjoy anyone's company here or communicate with anyone? Or enjoy the communication of others. So it's like a form. But here, you know, this is a spiritual form, which means it's not a temporary manifested form, but the Lord's form is existing before the material creation, and then even pervades within the material creation. So it's not. So it's enjoying on the spiritual platform. Well, but within the Mahatattva, there's also the jivas. Right? So, you know, the jivas are there as. So there's consciousness within the Mahatattva because the jivas are there. And there's also consciousness within the Mahatattva because, you know, the Lord has, you know, entered the material manifestation as Mahavishnu. He is the super soul of the whole cosmic manifestation. And it says here that says material nature was absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead Mahavishnu, and when it was required, it was manifested by the agency of Mahatattva. So the material energy. And when the material energy is required for material manifestation, then it becomes manifested through the agency of the Mahatattva. And, you know, time, you know, time is... The personality of Godhead, the conscious personality of Godhead, looking at the material energy, and he also injects the living entities into the material energy. So, you know, that time is considered to be his jnana shakti and kriya shakti. Jnana Shakti and Kriya Shakti, those two. Durga Devi is considered to represent Ichha Shakti, the will of the Lord. So, you know, those Shaktis of the Lord, they are, you know, all his Shaktis, that the, you know, they have personified forms. All his shaktis are persons. They have, you know, there is a presiding deity overriding, you know, particular shaktis. They have particular forms. And (clears throat) they carry out the function that the Lord wants by serving the Lord, by carrying out the various functions the Lord wants done. Instead of the Lord having to do it himself personally with his form, his Shaktis will serve him and carry out his function. You know, when the Lord glances at the material energy, he's a conscious person looking at the material energy. He's not touching it. So, and he is conscious of everything that is there within it, the whole material energy. He's aware of everything within that. He pervades the entire material energy because material energy is his energy. It's him in the form of his energy. So, you know, wherever there's a little bit of material energy, Krishna's there. Because that's him. He and his energy are not different. Omnipresent means that wherever his energies are, he's present within those energies. Omnipresent and omniscient. Wherever his energies are, he is conscious within, because that his the energy is not different from him. He is conscious he is the consciousness, literally, of the presiding deity, the super soul, who is conscious of the whole material energy. We're conscious of our body. Yeah, we're conscious even of the nails, although we don't have feeling there. They're somewhat separated. There's a point where, you cut your nails and you don't feel anything. But at the same time, what are the nails growing from? From a living body. The nails, there's a certain point where it's considered dead, it's inert, it's not conscious and like that, but it's actually growing from us. It's growing from a living body, and we're conscious of our nails. We're conscious of the part where it's intimately connected and it hurts, and we're conscious that here's the part I can't feel. So material energy is a little like that. It's actually coming from Krishna. Wherever it is, he's conscious of it. We're conscious of our hair. We do our hair in a different way. We make sure, look after our sikha and so many things. So it's like the ladies, they have their earrings and the jewelry. They're conscious, yes. Yeah, haven't lost one yet, So there's the consciousness of the Lord. And his energy, time, is through that glance, his energies will carry out what he wants done. By time, let's get the material manifestation going, Gana Shakti, I have a particular design by which everything works perfectly. So Gana, the material energy will work, but according to my specific perfect design, as Gyana Shakti and Kriya Shakti, let it take action. Let things start, taking shape. Let creations, all sorts of creation develop, elements and so many things. So, by his time, there is activity. Things start moving, things start interacting. But with his Gyana Shakti, it will not happen. It will only happen according to his design, perfect design, like that. And then, what is the purpose of that? Durga, representing the Ichha Shakti, the will of the Lord, that these living entities will, fulfill their destiny and their karma, and also have opportunity to come back. So he is the consciousness of the Mahatattva, and you know, these Shaktis, they're non-different from him, but they are, you know, fulfilling his purposes. Ultimately, everything is conscious. There's consciousness within everything because ultimately the Lord is conscious, minimum, of everything. We can't be conscious of everything. And, you know, wherever the Lord's energies are, you know, and wherever the living entities are, see, even us, we're a conscious living entity. So because we're conscious and we're actually a particle of the Lord, whatever I'm doing, the Lord is aware of because I'm actually a part of the Lord's energy. So in essence, the spiritual senses of my spiritual form are in fact part of God. So, you know, whatever I'm doing with my spiritual arms and hands and everything is literally him, but the energy of God. So he's conscious of whatever I'm doing as a soul, wherever I exist, whatever I'm seeing, perceiving, even I'm perceiving it in a covered material way, he's conscious of that because I am literally a part of his energy. So wherever you, whatever you're doing, that means God is conscious of that because you are part of God's energy. Wherever his energies are, it's not different from him. He's conscious in that place and he's within every atom. And, so, you know, yeah.
Probably the approach you you took to explain this question was like you discussed from top-down approach. Krishna is ultimately conscious and
yes.
So all his energy, so is the time,
yes.
His energy. But if we look from other side, from bottom to top, we could say that time doesn't exist in spiritual world.
Mm.
It only exists in material world.
Mm.
And it only interacts with the matter. So in that sense, it still is part of material energy, although material energy is eventually spiritual energy, but it's still material.
Yes, but what does exist in the spiritual world is the Kriya Shakti, the Icha Shakti, and the, you know, Jnana Shakti. In other words, these Shaktis exist, but in the spiritual world, they have they enjoy spiritual pastimes with the Lord.
So, because time is also
time is literally a combination of the, I think it's the Kriya and the Jnana Shaktis. And they have, you know, their eternal spiritual forms and relationships with the Lord. So, but they, you know, in the spiritual world, they don't have to, you know, manifest this illusory state of past, present and future as time does in the material world. You know, they, you know, manifest the... you know, perfect, you know, spiritual activities, you know, according to the will of the Lord, you know. So they have spiritual pastimes. Just like Sankirshan is the form of the Lord by which, you know, every living entity, he is presiding deity of... ego or identity. So in the spiritual world, everyone has got a spiritual, eternal spiritual identity he is given. But in the material world, you know, his Sankirshan, he manifests Mahavishnu, and when he glances at the material energy, and when he glances at the material energy, and there is time, but he also impregnates the living entities within the material energy. And at that point, there is the expansion of the personality of Godhead in his form of Sambhu, who impregnates the living entities into the material world and takes charge of their material identity. And Sambhu always meditates upon Sankirshan in order to carry out that task. See, so the task of identity always comes back to Sankirshan, whether it's done through Sambhu, who's taking inspiration to do his service in the material world and giving them their material identity, or gradually removing that false ego. It's all still the work of Sankirshan. So Sankirshan is performing the same task in the material world and in the spiritual world, because he is always a presiding deity of that. And the Shaktis also, you know, they have this similar task in the spiritual world or the material world. It's just that they have, there's a material counterpart to the same thing. So, and this material energy, you know, Durga Devi, when we say the material energy is wound up, Durga Devi is an expansion of Rama Devi also, who's, you know, the consort of Mahavishnu. So she's the shadow of the Chit potency. So, you know, Lakshmi, or, you know, the consort of Mahavishnu expands Durga Devi. And so, you know, when... Rama Devi has no more necessity of performing material pastimes and material energies wound up, then she goes about her activities in the service of the Lord. All the living entities in the spiritual world, you know, like Lakshmi, the consort of the Lord, you know, she facilitates the the services of the spirit souls in the spiritual world on behalf of the Lord, and you know, they have different requirements, you know, different spiritual opulences, and you know, what have you. And in the material world, Durga Devi just supplies all those necessities and oversees that for their material requirements. You know, it's a sort of a similar, you know, she's like the mother, you know, she's like a mother nurturing and supplying, in one sense, requirements for our service. In the material world, it's a material service. In the spiritual world, it's a spiritual service. But she's still like the mother, you know. In the same way as we say that Shiva doesn't exist in the spiritual world, because there's no function for Shiva, but you know, when he's gradually, you know, wound up, ultimately, you know, whatever activities are performed by Shiva in this material world are performed by Sankirshan, and Sankirshan has activities in the spiritual world. So it's like that. So you might say, well, there's no Shiva in the spiritual world, but there's Sankirshan, or, you know, Sadashiva is a form of Narayan. So time exists in the spiritual world, but because it exists in the spiritual Shakti form, it doesn't have the same qualities of past, present, and future. So it's those qualities, material qualities of past, present, and future, which don't exist in the spiritual world in one sense. Time as we know it here doesn't exist in the spiritual world. But that spiritual energy which manifests time in the material world exists in the spiritual world as Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti. And the material energy which exists in this material world does exist in the spiritual world in the form of Lakshmi, in a spiritual form. So it's the same personalities and it's the same energy. So ultimately, therefore, we say everything is spiritual. What's that?
Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samatma Sarvamiti.
Yeah.
Everything is Krishna.
Yeah, everything, yeah. So everything is spiritual. Yeah. And that's why, you know, Srila Prabhupada gives that nice example that an electrician can use the same energy to heat or cool. So Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, she can perform activities in the spiritual world. And as Durga Devi, when she expands, she's performing activities in to make it all material. Kriya Shakti, Jnana Shakti, you know, they perform their, make the Lord's, you know, wonderful pastimes, perfect. And there's so much wonderful activity for pastimes in the spiritual world, the material world, that we have their material counterpart. So ultimately, everything is done by the Lord's spiritual energy. And those spiritual energies are eternal. And that's why it says, you know, in this chapter 13 of the Bhagavad Gita, text number 20, material nature and the living entity should be understood to be beginningless. But this is the difference. Their transformation and the modes of matter are products of material nature. So they're beginningless and their activities in the spiritual world are different. But when we see them in the material world, there are different transformations produced, so many different material bodies and that under the different modes. Well, that part doesn't exist in the spiritual world. So that, you know, this is the concept we're coming to, you know, try and understand. The Lord has so many spiritual energies. And in the spiritual world, they perform all different particular services to the Lord, giving identity, you know, bestowing, you know, the right spiritual environment for one's service and mood and, you know, so many different things, arranging different pastimes for the Lord, so many different things, giving a particular type of... levels of spiritual awareness and so many things. Those personalities then can also be the same personalities who are responsible for the material creation and what we do in the material world. But those varieties of activities they arrange for us in the material world, they just don't arrange for us in the spiritual world. You know, someone goes to prison, you know. So the government, it's the same government, they arrange so many particular activities for the prisoners, but when they're free, they don't arrange those particular type of activities for them as free citizens. But it's the same government. Same persons involved, giving two completely different, like that. It does take, you know, when you sort of meditate upon it just logically and you know, from the point that Krishna's, see, that's where you're given the right thing to think about and you try and understand it. Now, that sort of philosophical speculation is acceptable. See? So devotees sometimes do philosophical speculation, just like we're doing here. Mm-hmm. You're given the right information and you try to understand it. That's allowable philosophical speculation, trying to understand that which is actually correct. What's not acceptable is philosophical the speculation is where you don't know what the actual truth is and you're trying to understand it, working your way up. That's not acceptable. And you know, these are the, you know, for devotees, as you can see, you know, sometimes people say to me, oh, you know, takes you an hour and a half to drive from Winchelsea or, you know, the Mornington Peninsula to the temple or wherever you're going. I'm thinking it's just not long enough. You know, it's an hour and a half, you know, because it's just a straight run. So I'll read these verses and all the way I'm trying to come to terms, you know, like over 40 years just trying to... when I used to do Sankirtan as well, you know, I'd read something from the Gita and then in between shops, I'd be trying to think of it, and then I walk up to a customer and then, you know, then you get the, you have a mantra. Mantras are great, you know, for selling things because you don't have to think too much. You say one thing, you know they're going to have one or two responses. Whichever way they say, they're going to buy something. So, you know... So it gives you, you know, you can think. And sometimes I used to do this thing where I'd be saying the mantra, you know, to sell something, and I'm still got this, you know, concept in my head at the back of a Gita trying to nut it out. And then the person bought something, I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, you're up to there, you know. I was still thinking about that verse, you know, and you walk out. So, but this is the process. You actually get the right thing and you've got to try and think about it and, you know, gradually, and you're serving Krishna and he allows you to, you know, understand it because you're serving him. If you weren't serving him, what happens is that, the modes of material nature cause a lot of interference. And you just never come to these conclusions.
Like you're saying about doing service to understand it, then because we have spiritual senses. So I just was looking up that verse that it says we can't understand the transcendental nature of Krishna with contaminated senses.
Mm. Mm.
So they have to be purified by sense.
Yeah, we, you know, there's a lot of interference in the sense that when our mind and senses are contaminated, we just don't want there to be someone who's the enjoyer and it's not me. You know, we just really don't want that philosophy to exist. It's the last thing. Oh my goodness, you know, what if it's true? What if I'm not the enjoyer and it is someone else? I've got a problem, you know. And you know, that's, you know, we constantly... we'll take the first opportunity that anything can reassure us that, look, forget that philosophy, you know, just go out and enjoy. oh, that's a good reason. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. There was a fault in the editing in Prabhupada's Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. Okay. That's enough. You know. Or, oh, Krishna consciousness is supposed to be perfect. What about that devotee? What about the way they treat me? You know, we'll find something. Oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to enjoy it. So, you know, that's a big problem. It takes a little bit of time, you know, for us to assimilate the philosophy. And if before us assimilating the philosophy, our mind and senses get the best of us and drag us back into Maya, you know, then... which is sort of what we want to do, you know, we've got a problem. So, and the service basically keeps us from going back into Maya, so it's very important because it keeps us away from Maya. And the service means that because our mind and senses are not always disturbed and distracted by sense gratification and the ups and downs and the happiness and distress of life, we can keep a fixed, you know, clear concentration on, you know, these subject matters, and the service allows us to apply the knowledge and see that it's actually working. Yes, I'm dealing with Krishna as a person, and what I see is he's actually dealing with me as a person. He knows what's in my heart, and he's controlling the material energy and you know everything in such a way that I can see by serving him in devotional service, I'm actually getting a result from a person who's a conscious being who knows what I'm thinking, you know, and who can control this material energy. So, you know, it's a practical application. So the devotional service is extremely important. And as we see with Driva Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj, Driva Maharaj was touched on the head with the conch shell, wasn't it? And Prahlad Maharaj was touched on the head with the hand of the Lord. You know, we do understand that, you know, the Lord's Shaktis have a role. The Lord himself and the Shaktis, the blessings, they have a role in allowing us to understand spiritual subject matters. In the same way we do our Gayatri, you know, we understand that the knowledge that we have in this material world is not just dependent upon how good we can think it through, but we need the sun to rise up in the morning and, you know, for us to be able to really see and perceive and utilize our sense. The sun is an important part. You know, our intelligence is very much connected with the light of the sun being present and empowering our senses and what have you, that energy. So it's not just our intelligence. Without the energy of the sun, how much could we do with our intelligence? We'd be really, you know, in the dark ages, isn't it? So, you know, the Shaktis of the Lord are like that. They actually illuminate our heart. Allow us to perceive spiritual truth. So, you know, the presence of the Lord. So, you know, there's a curtain of Maya that the Lord removes. So it's very, very powerful. and just, you know, the fact that our senses become purified and, you know, they just become very good instruments that are working for us to, you know, perceive these spiritual truths and put them into practice. Mm.
Oh, there is a difference between Prahlad Maharaj's prayers and Kunti Devi's prayers. Prahlad's prayers is very philosophical and technical, and Kunti Devi's is as a devotional, I feel. Mm. This is too technical. But Kunti Devi's prayers is so nice.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, the beauty of the Bhagavatam, of course, and is that, you know, this philosophy can be accepted, you know, can be given in a very simple way. But, you know, that's your credit, in a sense. That's why I was saying that if you can, if someone can just present the philosophy in a very simple way and you just accept it, which, you know, you have done, that's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's a testament to your Krishna consciousness. That's why we call you Nirmala Krishna. You know, one whose senses are completely purified. Nirmala, no? Is a completely, and therefore you just see Krishna very easily.
I won't see it that way. I'll just say that for my brain, this is easy to understand.
Yeah, that's because your brain is very purified. That's what we call you Nirmala.
And Kuntidev says in the end, may my heart flow towards you like the ocean flows towards you. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, for me, maybe that I can understand. this technical thing, I think maybe I'm having a mental block.
Well, what Prahlad, you know, so Queen Kunti's prayers you're accepting because basically you're on a devotional platform, you accept Krishna, you accept devotional service. Prahlad's certainly preaching to atheistic people, and as we said, you know, if we can accept Krishna and his is the personality of Godhead, and he has different energies, and this material energy is one of them. Still, here we're not just preaching to atheists. Last week we were discussing how the devotees who don't properly understand the philosophy that everything is Krishna, everything is Krishna's energy, there's a lot of strange things that devotees do, because they may accept the philosophy and the sentiment strikes a chord, but there, for some devotees, there's some philosophical misapplications. You know, this point that the material energy is non-different from Krishna, that can be really abused in a lot of different ways. The philosophy that everything is spiritual, the movement is completely spiritual. So many, you know, so many different things like that can be misapplied, and therefore, at least someone has to understand it. You know, in order to prevent misbehavior and authorizing misbehavior on the spiritual platform by citing the Bhagavatam. That's one of the things that I've seen over, you know, many years. You know, and that's the problem. It's actually a big problem. So sometimes, you know, if one devotee has read the prayers of Queen Kunti and another one has read the prayers of Queen Kunti, and one is misbehaving and the other one is not, then we have to go a little deeper into the philosophy to analyze which one is correct in their behavior. And then that means we go a little deeper, you know, into that philosophy. It's the same philosophy. We do have to go a little deeper. And this is what the Bhagavatam does. It just goes a little deeper, but there's a very important purpose in doing that. So, you know, one of the difficulties I see with grihasthas and the leaders of the movement in ISKCON over many years is that the families of devotees, of men, have been seen to be somewhat material, a material, you know, a bit of a material bondage, you know, in ISKCON, and we're talking about the people giving the classes and the people, the managers neglecting the families. It still goes on today where, you know, sometimes what happens is that, you know, grihasthas, you know, looking after their, helping grihasthas to look after their family life is considered to be somewhat of a diversion from Krishna consciousness, from you know, or service to Krishna. It's almost like why put any facility into that? You know, that's their material household life. You see, why put any facility or effort into that? You know, they're grihasthas. It's like, you know, they've got the material attachments and material lives and something like that. You know, so we're more concerned with, you know, those doing full on spiritual activities. You know, like you know, those who are saffron. So, you know, that's a big problem. That's been a big problem in ISKCON, which I've fought against. And it's actually one of the things that made me, you know, really want to study Prabhupada's philosophy, because I always knew it was wrong. You know, that, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. You know, the grihasthas are raising the children who will be the leaders of this movement. Therefore, if we neglect them as if their activities are material activities, then we neglect the children that we want to lead the movement in the future. So, you know, which part of it is material? You see? And actually, you know, if you see, Prabhupada said his spiritual master created an army of brahmacharis and sannyasis, and I created an army of grihasthas, and my grihasthas are opening centres all over the world. And Prabhupada therefore personally, to show that these grihasthas and everything about them is not material, he all personally organised to do their marriages as a sannyasi, which is unheard of. Because it has nothing to do with material affairs, it is a completely spiritual activity. So this is just one example, you know, and ISKCON is infamous for neglecting grihasthas. In my day, you know, when I used to take prasadam, so say in Adelaide, we'd all sit in the you know, the one big room. So the women and children would always sit separately, and the men would always sit separately. So we do that to a certain degree.
It's the same thing even today.
What's that?
In Melbourne, it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. But, you know, my girls always wanted to sit with me. And so I always let them.
Yeah, children keep changing between parents.
No, my children just wanted to sit with me particularly. So I would have, you know, one girl on one side, one girl on one side. And, you know, the men, so we're sitting in a circle, so like a big circle, and they would all snicker and tell jokes about me in front of me while I was sitting there, you know. Because, you know, that, you know, like he's like this attached grihasthi, you know, he's got his little girls there, you know. The only children that sat with the men was, there was one of the boy of the temple president and the odd other boy. Otherwise, even boys, you know, generally, it's like, you know, there's something, you know, a distraction, mundane. And, it, you know, it was just a very strange, you know, it was sort of wrong. It made my children feel that there was something inferior, unwanted. You know, there was that definite mood there. And, you know, which is definitely a wrong thing to give to a child, that, you know, you're trying to encourage to be part of this movement when they grow up. And there's a lot of things like that which my children still, you know, it affects them to this day in their adults. So it's because of things like that that we have to go into the philosophy a little bit more. Is it material? Are the affairs of grihasthas material? Some may be and some may not be. Which is, where do you form the dividing line? Where, okay, some grihasthas, some of their activities may be, you know, part of their conditioning, and some are completely spiritual. But how do we as a movement just perform activities which are completely spiritual, which just completely spiritualizes their whatever they're doing, Right? So no matter whether someone's material, fully spiritual or partially, you know, a little spiritual inclination or fully material, our activities towards them should be completely spiritual. So what constitutes that? If we join in on their activities, do we become implicated in their material, some material? At what stage does our association with Grihasthas become material? How do we keep it completely on the spiritual platform as a movement, that we're spiritualizing them? We're only performing spiritual activities and spiritualizing them. And so, you know, where do we draw the line between what becomes material and spiritual? And this is the problem ISKCON has had with Grihasthas. And that's just one example. And it's a big example. Right? So then if I sat here with, and you know, all sorts of leaders, Grihasthas and Brahmacharis, they'd all be saying, oh, this is material, this is spiritual, like that. It doesn't matter what you say, it's what the Bhagavatam says. And would anyone be able to quote the Bhagavatam authoritatively as to how to draw a distinction between what becomes material and spiritual? Because that's what we're trying to do. And, you know, one of the things I found in the whole history of, you know, 40 years of ISKCON is that whenever these discussions come up, and I've pointed out there's a problem in the perception of devotees and the way they're dealing with things, that, you know, it's not good for preaching, because and they will not discuss the Bhagavatam. On the higher levels, you say, you know, you point out, but here it is in the Bhagavatam. And they skillfully avoid that. So when we have managements and leaders that cannot skillfully avoid the conclusions of the Bhagavatam, we will not have those sort of problems with Grihasthas, the way we treat Grihasthas. But as long as, you know, leaders, you know, those guiding the society, you know, skillfully avoid the Bhagavatam and just, you know, pull rank, then we're going to have a problem. So it's very, very important that at least some of the devotees who are going to deal with all these issues actually understand the philosophy as what is the difference between a material activity and a spiritual activity. It's not that easy. We're sitting here for like 3 hours and we're sort of just, you know, really coming to terms with, how can something be material and spiritual, you know? Like, we're really trying to come to terms with it. It's almost like a new topic. But this should be something we've discussed since the day we were devotees and we're getting a very clear conception. And for many, it's a new topic. We're starting to, oh, maybe I should start thinking about this. But actually, you know, a good quality devotee, especially if they're in a leading position or a preaching position, without the slightest doubt in their mind, they can distinguish between what is spiritual and spiritualizing to others, and where the contamination of the modes of material natures are acting. And therefore, Krishna goes to a lot of trouble to distinguish both. In the Bhagavad Gita, 14th chapter, you know, what are the he describes in this 14th chapter. That says it says in verse number 19. When you can see that there is nothing beyond the modes of material nature in all activities, and that the Supreme Lord is transcendental to all these modes, then you can know my spiritual nature. Therefore, if one of the problems is, here Prahlad Maharaj is explaining to us how we can see Krishna everywhere. If we look at it as something as material and we're not seeing Krishna, then we got a problem in our Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Right? If we look at something and we can't see Krishna, we can see something material, so we can't see, well, where's Krishna in this? We got a problem. So we need to be able to see, like Prahlad did, you know, Is Krishna in this stone? Yes, Krishna is there. Krishna is everywhere. For Prahlad, he's everywhere at all times and he had no problem seeing him. That's called Krishna consciousness. When we can't do that, then we've got a limitation in our Krishna consciousness. We should be able to see Krishna at all times, and even within all the different material affairs and even with the activities of the modes of material nature, etc., we should be able to see Krishna. And while we can see Krishna, we can also see the modes of material nature acting, if they're acting, on a living entity. So we see the modes of material nature. Everything is spiritual. Oh, wonderful, everything is spiritual. No, that's tamagun, Prabhu. That's nonsense. That's jealousy. That's rajas. That's over-endeavor, Prabhu. That's bodily conception of life. So we see Krishna and we see the modes of material nature. The modes of material nature, we don't want them to act on us, and we know they're not acting on Krishna, but we can see Krishna and still see they're acting on that living entity and even on some devotees. That's Krishna consciousness.
Is that like Vyasadeva saw Krishna and the three modes of nature?
Yeah.
Which part? From listen carefully, or?
No, I was just guessing. The reading is that everywhere is Krishna, on one side, another person is saying, no, it's Krishna with the modes of material nature.
Yeah, okay. I'll go to the. Yeah. Basically, for instance, someone's reading the Bhagavatam. Oh, Prahlad Maharaj says everything is Krishna. But you know, it's all spiritual, it's all Krishna. And we say, no. Prabhu, you're in Maya. And your activities constitute devotional service mixed with some tamaguna. There's some material energy acting in your consciousness and your behavior. It's not all spiritual. There's some material contamination in the way you're doing your devotional service. But they're reading the Bhagavatam. It's all spiritual. Prahlad says it's all spiritual. You do devotional service, it's all on the spiritual platform. It's all Krishna. I see Krishna everywhere. You may see Krishna everywhere, Prabhu, but do you see how tamaguna is affecting your mind? No, I cannot see that. I just see everything. So that's nonsense. That's nonsense. This is a very interesting statement by Krishna. He's saying, when you see there's nothing beyond these modes of material nature in all activities, so we're seeing how the modes of material nature constantly surround us in this material world and acting on so many living beings. But we see the personality of God, it is beyond them. He's completely transcendental. He's controlling them. And he's aloof from them. And he is controlling all living beings by these modes of material nature, including devotees who get a little bit in Maya in their way they do things. So one who sees all of those things, that's Krishna consciousness. We see Krishna, he's completely spiritual. We see that devotees are performing activities that are sanctioned by the parampara, which are completely spiritualizing the world. And that's completely spiritual. It's authorized. And we also see, to the extent to which someone has been spiritualized and to the extent they're still affected by the modes of material nature, which is still controlling them to some degree. We see that.
Let me give you an example.
A devotee... a devotee borrows someone's car, right? It's a marathon. Prabhu, can I use your car? Oh no, I need this car. It's actually happened to me. It actually happened to me. I'll tell you the story in a minute. I'll just give you a scenario. Let's say someone from the Brahmachari ashram borrows one of the Grihastha's cars for a book marathon. And the Greek Hazard says, Prabhu, I don't really want to lend my car because, you know, I earn my income with that. And if I don't have the car, something happens to it, I will be in so much difficulty. My whole family will suffer from it. Ah, don't be so attached, you know, to your material possessions, Prabhu, these Grihasthas. This is Sankirtan. This is book distribution. You attach Grihastha, you know. Prabhu, you promised me that if anything happens to that car, you'll replace it, you know. It's only a $200 car. Yeah, Prabhu, I promise on Krishna's lotus feet. So the devotee goes out. You heard that one? Yeah. Devotee goes out, writes the car off. Why? Thrashes it. Driving 120 miles an hour and, you know, right up, blows the engine up. Comes back. Prabhu, where's my car? Oh, you know, look, we wrote it off, but, you know, it's Krishna's arrangement. You know? Everything. You know, you're a devotee under Krishna's protection. If this happens to you, it's got to be Krishna's look. You know, Krishna's will that, you know, these things happen to you to stop being so attached to your possessions like that. Yeah. So, you know, Krishna's arranged this for you like that. Okay. Can you spot the problem? Now, I'll tell you the actual story. So, as you see here, and this brahmacharya, it's an actual thing that happened to me, is supported by the whole ashram, right up to the temple prison. Oh, you know, Ganga is attached. He's got the philosophy and the whole temple supporting it. I'm thinking this is, you know, wrong. This is a wrong application of our philosophy. What actually happened was this devotee, he was a brother of the temple prison up in Sydney, but he was a brahmacharya in Adelaide. So he did that. He actually wanted to borrow my car, and I said no, because I need it. And I was really poor, you know. Anyway, he promised me on Krishna's lotus feet. So what happened? He went out and he wrote it off. And then he just gave me this blab, you know, about, you know, you're attached and this, that, and the other. Just literally wrote it off, you know. Just that's it. Stop talking about it, sort of thing, you know. And so, you know, it actually happened. And the next morning, I came down to see him, and he was lying in his bed, he was hunched up on his knees and his hands, and he'd been vomiting all night. He'd been dry reaching. Dry reaching is where you just keep vomiting, but there's nothing left to vomit. And when I walked in the room, he turned around to me. He said, Ganga, I will get you another car. I never even said anything to him. He said, Ganga, I'll get you another car, which he did. He paid. It was only a few hundred bucks. You buy a car for a few hundred bucks in those days. And he understood what he did was nonsense. So did I. And everyone else did after that. But, you know, this is why, Nirmala, that, you know, it's this sort of nonsense that goes on in the name of, you know, Krishna consciousness, where people can't distinguish between, you know, what is a spiritual activity and what is actually a devotee. You know, in other words, I'm the devotee in that situation who's just a material grihastha who's attached to my possessions. And there's nothing spiritual about the way I use that car. And he's doing book distribution. Of course, you know, I was also doing book distribution. But, you know, so it's just, you know, there are thousands and thousands of, you know, things like that. I mean, I could go on the stories, but, you know, I want to go running for the door. You know, they're horrible stories. But, you know, there must be a proper understanding of, you know, what is material and what is spiritual. and if there's not, it causes so many different problems in our movement. It causes problems for the women. The women have been subjected to, you know, this sort of identity as like, you know, the personification of Maya, you know. in the form of women and children, and then grihasthas, like that. So you know, and you know, on the other hand, brahmacharis, sannyasis, or people in positions, they're the personification of spirituality, even when so many of their activities are actually, you know, sometimes very under the modes of tamagun, rajagun, or sattvagun. So, you know, we will have a problem in our movement if we can't actually, you know, properly understand this philosophy. And that's why I spend so much time on it, because I, you know, you can see, you'll see its practical effect. If you don't understand it, is dreadful. You know, Rupa Goswami also says that devotional service, which you know, is not done according to the instructions of the scriptures and rules, regulations, and the instructions, and you know, the directions. It's just a nuisance to society. It becomes a nuisance within ISKCON. It becomes a nuisance to the world. You know. So it is good, you know, that, you know, Nirmala, you can, as we said, just accept the straightforward philosophy straight away and just accept that, which is very good. You know, that's a sign of Krishna consciousness. But for the sake of preaching and maintaining a whole lot of new devotees who come in with their material concepts and then want to change what we do, what Prabhupada wants in ISKCON, according to their material conceptions. You know, we don't want new devotees, untrained, in the Bhagavatam, saying, this is material and this is spiritual. We don't want that. That's already happened. So, you know, anyone who comes to the movement, they do not direct what is material and what is spiritual. They hear from authorities, this is spiritual and this is material. But actually, at the moment, from what I see, especially when you get big temples like this, that's not the way it's happening. All right, so I'm not sure what the time is, but...
5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, we'll leave it there. But as you can see, it's you know, a lot of juice in these purports when you get down to their trying to understand it. you know, wonderful. In essence, Prahlad Maharaj is revealing what is Krishna consciousness. To offer prayers to the Lord, you actually have to understand the science of Krishna and present it as a prayer to the Lord. You know, to present a proper prayer to the Lord means you're presenting something the Lord is completely in agreement with. You don't want to offer a prayer to Nadasingha that he's thinking, what on earth are you saying? You know, I don't agree with that, any of that. Get your prayers out of here. So, you know, when great devotees offer their prayers, it means that they have the same spiritual vision that the Lord has, which is very pleasing to him. So in other words, they're presenting Krishna consciousness like that. And if we have a different concept than Prahlad Maharaj, it means we're not Krishna conscious. And the beauty of this is we may not know what Krishna consciousness is, which, you know, especially for me, that's the case. But when you hear Prahlad, you think, okay, I'm going to try and understand that and keep lining up with that over time, you know. That should be I should always be in agreement with that, with my activities and my thoughts. So you sort of, you know, as we said, you presented the right thing and you try to line up with it, you know, in your consciousness and your activities. That's the easy way to do it, rather than trying to work out what it is yourself and you'll never get there. That's, yeah. All right, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Jai.
Has ISKCON become a bit more balanced in terms of grihasthas due to the influence of...
It depends which... some parts of ISKCON, from what I hear, very good. Okay. Some parts of ISKCON, very good. Some not. Yeah. But, you know, we have to understand it will always be a problem You know, it's that, you know, dealing with women and children and family life, which appear to be material, and trying to understand how it can be spiritualized and where it's not spiritual. That will always be a problem to any spiritual person.
Mm-hmm.
Every spiritualist will always face that problem. And ISKCON is the only spiritual society which actually, you know, doesn't reject, you know, women and children and family life as Maya. We embrace it as, you know, a foundation of what of being a good devotee, you know, and having a good society. So, but most societies, this is why they're having trouble in Christianity. They won't let in, you know, they won't let the priest marry because it's somehow, you know, it's downgrading their spirituality, and therefore it's led to a whole lot, you know, the, you know, pedophiles and so many things, you see. So, you know, many different spiritual and in some, you know, religions, they're very harsh and demeaning in the way that they treat the women and children, because it is just accepted as Maya, you know. So, you know, this will always be a problem for those on the spiritual path. In our philosophy, the proper understanding is there in the scriptures, but the problem is that, you know, in ISKCON, we do have a history where people have even taken leading roles as preachers, as teachers within the society, and as managers, and their concept of the Bhagavatam has not matured, and therefore, you know, the way we've treated, you know, families, women and children, as just one issue among many, but it's probably one of the biggest ones. You know, it has literally been, you know, quite a real failure in ISKCON, you know, a real failure. And in many parts of the world it still is, but as far as I understand, there are some parts of the world which are, you know, really coming to terms with it because they're actually studying the book.
The spiritual movements which keep women and children separate
mm.
have some problems. And ISKCON, where we try to integrate everybody, has different kinds of problems.
Mm.
Problems are there in both sides, it's just the nature of the problems changes.
No, there's no problem if there's a Krishna consciousness is there. That's the point. Yeah. and as long as the Krishna consciousness is there, that's, you'll have problems. That's the point. Okay. Shri Krishna Salagam Shri Ki Jai Shri Jigwani Tai Ki Jai Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai Gold upon him.